from KQED.
This is the California Report. Good morning to you. I'm John Sepulveda. We begin this morning with wildfires. U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen is telling California residents to prepare for future major disasters. She toured Shasta County on Friday, where the Carr Fire has scorched more than 200,000 acres and killed 8 people. Nielsen, whose department oversees FEMA, met with Governor Jerry Brown as part of her trip to the state.
Top of his agenda and mine are to find ways that we can better model this type of a hazard and we can be even better prepared going forward. We really need to change all of our assistance programs so that we can get the assistance out ahead of the hazard and disaster to help communities be prepared and to mitigate.
Over 800,000 acres have burned across the state so far this year, more than twice the amount that is burned by this point last year. We're going to move on now and remember that this weekend marked the one-year anniversary of a white nationalist rally in Charlottesville, Virginia. That's, of course, when someone described as a Nazi sympathizer drove his car into a group of counter-protesters, injuring many, and most devastatingly, killing 32-year-old activist Heather Heyer. There was a rally this weekend in Washington, D.C. Very few people have turned up. There is a question of what is being done to counter these hate groups. And one industry that has received a lot of criticism about it is Silicon Valley. They are working to combat hate speech on social media in some cases. And joining me now is Silicon Valley Bureau reporter Rachel Miro to talk about this. Hi, Rachel.
Good morning.
So we are seeing a move to make artificial intelligence a tool in essentially filtering out hate speech from social media platforms. Why are they doing this?
Because software needs human help identifying subtleties like subtext and context and changing text. Because, of course, people who employ hate speech change their language with the intent of sidestepping automated detection. The companies are also going outside to academic consultants. And that's a good thing as far as a woman named Britton Heller sees it. She's the Anti-Defamation League's point person for Silicon Valley. Yes, they have one now. And she's been consulting with tech firms, too. She's also been working with UC Berkeley's D-Lab to develop a machine learning algorithm that predicts, with what she says is about 85% accuracy, whether a target of hate speech would consider a comment to be hateful or not.
And it creates community-centric definitions of what hate speech is. We don't want tech companies to tell us what is or is not hate speech.
Well, let me just stop that and just challenge that assumption. Why don't we want tech companies telling us what hate speech is or is not? What's the problem with that if we're using their platforms?
In part, because Silicon Valley has a well-established diversity problem. If the vast majority of people doing the hate speech assessment are white and Asian males, they're simply things they're not going to catch. But also, as we've seen recently with Twitter refusing to ban the hugely popular conspiracy theorist Alex Jones and his InfoWars, some companies are just going to resist getting rid of some offensive material, either because of a libertarian worldview that says, like it or not, you got to let that stuff be, or because the content is so popular it keeps people clicking, and eyeballs are what social media firms sell to advertisers.
Rachel Miro, covering culture and technology out of KQED's Silicon Valley Bureau. Rachel, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And finally today, deportations and forced family separations constitute a public health crisis. That's according to an article in the new edition of the American Journal of Community Psychology. The authors looked at 30 years of research spanning up to the Trump administration, meaning this is not a new condition. They found that the mental health effects move far beyond immigrant communities. KAZU's Krista Almanzon spoke with one of the paper's authors.
UC Santa Cruz psychology professor Regina Langhout is the paper's lead author. I met her in her office. So who experiences these ripple effects?
These ripple effects happen within the community at large, even for people who are not targeted, even if they're citizens, right? Because these effects are broader than that. That's the way that psychology works. Even if they are citizens, start to draw back from public society.
How does a U.S. citizen end up thinking, I could be next?
So the thing that the research shows about children especially is that they don't always know the difference in status, and so they just see people being targeted. And so they can begin to believe that they will be targeted as well.
Since you started this research, we've had the policy of zero tolerance. What are your thoughts about the effects of that, even though we know that time period isn't included in this research?
So what's happening now, it is a ratcheting up of a trajectory that we have been on since the mid-90s. So in terms of what we can say about a zero tolerance policy, one is that in the research that we examined, which also includes statistics from the U.S. government, we know that about 75% of families that present at the border who are seeking asylum, the U.S. government says has a credible case and a credible threat of returning to their home country. Those statistics are really important when we think about what's happening at the border now. We also know from the research that we've done that the journey to get to the border can also be quite harrowing. And so to separate children from their parents at that point is going to have very severe effects for the families and the children, much like we see in the literature that we've done that, again, has been focused on forced family separation at the interior, not at the border. And still, I think we have no reason to believe that the results would be that different.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
That's UC Santa Cruz psychology professor Regina Langhout. For the California Report, I'm Krista Almanzon in Santa Cruz.
Last week, we told you about the expected sentencing for two defendants in a deadly warehouse fire in Oakland a year and a half ago that killed 36 people. This was supposed to be a done deal, but on Friday, the judge rejected a plea in that criminal case. KQED's Alex Emsley reports.
Primary leaseholder Derek Almena turned the warehouse into what became known as the Ghost Ship, an illicit living and event space crammed with wood, trailers, and a rigged electrical system that was far from up to code. It burned during a concert there in December 2016, trapping three dozen people inside. Almena and Max Harris, who helped plan the event, were each charged with 36 counts of involuntary manslaughter. The men had agreed to a deal that would have sentenced them to less than 10 years in jail. But the judge unexpectedly rejected it last Friday, finding Almena has yet to take responsibility. That throws what happens next into question. The case is proceeding to trial next year, but the prosecution has admitted to holes in their case, including an undetermined cause of the fire. For the California Report, I'm Alex Emsley.
Also on Friday, a San Francisco jury awarded $289 million to a former school groundskeeper who claimed that Monsanto's popular weed killer Roundup contributed to his terminal non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. The state court jury found the agrochemical giant failed to adequately warn of the risks of using Roundup. Dwayne Johnson's lawyer said he sprayed the weed killer in large quantities for his job. Robert Kennedy Jr. is one of Johnson's attorneys. He praised the jury's decision.
Some of the testimony was highly technical and I would say boring. None of them ever went to sleep. They were all rapt attention. It was really pretty extraordinary.
Monsanto has denied its products has any link with cancer. They've promised to appeal.
Support for the California Report comes from Carnegie Mellon University's Master of Science in Software Management. Students learn product management at CMU's Silicon Valley campus with part-time evening classes. cmu.edu/iii. Personal Capital, providing customers a real-time dashboard view into all of their financial accounts with insight-driven wealth advisory services. PersonalCapital.com. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems.
A team of scientists and conservationists have released over 250 endangered frogs back into their native habitat in the San Bernardino National Forest. Here's Benjamin Perper.
I'm hiking up a stretch of wooded creek deep in the San Bernardino Mountains. With me are about a dozen biologists, conservationists, and photographers, all wading through forest and hip-deep water. The reason?
We are bringing back the mountain yellow-legged frog here in the San Bernardino Mountains.
The mountain yellow-legged frog. It's an endangered species of small frogs that are native to the mountains of Southern California. The species was nearly wiped out by habitat destruction and the introduction of trout into mountain lakes. The idea there was to encourage fishing and tourism, but all those trout ended up eating a lot of frog eggs. At a low point in 2002, there were fewer than 100 mountain yellow-legged frogs left in the wild. Nowadays, thanks to conservation efforts like this one, there's about 4,000. And Deborah Shire, Associate Director of Recovery Ecology at San Diego Zoo Global, is about to add 262 froglets, or adolescent frogs, into the creek.
A couple of years ago, there were no frogs left that we knew of. For the first time in the last couple of years, we've been putting animals back into the population.
Not all of the frogs will survive. Natural predators like garter snakes and birds are still common around here. But the hope is that the frog release will reintroduce an important part of the food chain that's been missing in this habitat for a while now. You know, frogs eat bugs, birds eat frogs. Shire opens up the buckets and pours them into the creek. Frogs jump everywhere.
Now what's up with that?
You've made
it's
a
climbing on my leg.
For the California Report, I'm Benjamin Perper in the San Bernardino Mountains.
And that's the California Report. I'm John Sepulvedo. Have a great day.